This radio commercial was made to convince you to stop speeding. We can't use siren sound effects on the radio, so we'll use other equally jarring sound effects to get your attention. Like telling you that whether you drive a little over the speed limit or a lot, you can crash just the same. You could hurt yourself or worse, others.
I'm at the scene of the collision.
And the damage you cause will be beyond repair. See? We didn't have to use crash or siren sounds after all. Speeding catches up with you. Brought to you by NHTSA.
What do we always say?
This is the Rich Eisen Show.
They've almost self-loathed themselves into this final.
Live from the Rich Eisen Show studio in Los Angeles.
Roger Bennett back here on the program.
They will play a quite daunting Spain. And every time they've won, the nation has said, but you're terrible, you're doomed.
And Spain dealing in silverware once more.
Earlier on the show, Apple TV lead MLS analyst Taylor Twellman, senior NFL writer for The Athletic, Kevin Fishbane, coming up, co-creator of Netflix's Unstable, actor Rob Lowe, and now, it's Rich Eisen.
Ah, yes, hour number three of the Rich Eisen Show is on the way. We have got a great third hour in store for you. Just said hello in our green room to Rob Lowe, who is back here on our show, and his new show on Netflix, season two of Unstable. Fun show with him and his son, playing a father-son combination. And it's fun, and it's awesome. And he's coming out here in studio in about 10 minutes' time to talk about it. Since he's here, we're gonna maximize our Rob Lowe time.
Might as well.
And go down memory lane with somebody who's been in a million things that we all love. And, I'll give you two guesses, Chris. Two things. One, he's really let himself go, or he looks exactly the same.
Well, I did see him backstage on Thursday night, so I know the answer to this.
Oh, you saw him? He was at the ESPYs.
He was.
Well, what did he do for the ESPYs?
He presented. I was in the back, so I couldn't actually hear what category it was.
Okay, fantastic.
Yeah, yeah. He was wearing like a blue velvet jacket. He looked great.
Is that right? Yeah. That's still one of the few movies he wasn't in, is Blue Velvet. I think.
Blue or Velvet? Well, how would we describe that? When I was on the set of Velvet.
Oh, my gosh. It's always fun when Rob stops by, and he's about to right here on the program. 844-204-RICH is the number to dial. Greg Sankey, one of my favorites. I love watching this guy do his work for the SEC, the commissioner of the SEC. First time I met him was at the Super Bowl, where it was in Minnesota, I think. No, it was Atlanta. That's where it was. It was a Super Bowl because you were with me in the commissioner's suite in Minnesota, wearing a Red Sox hat.
It's great.
What a dummy.
I don't understand your take on this.
You can't wear. I'd rather you have worn the Rob Lowe NFL hat.
I really don't understand your take on this.
Because it's another sport. You don't show up. You wouldn't show up to, in Rob Manfred's suite wearing a Patriot hat.
If I wore a Patriot hat every single day and it was firmly broken in, like the one
Didn't
I was
Roger
wearing.
Goodell point it out to you?
No. I was pacing in the fourth quarter and he was like, "You all right? You going to make it?"
Yeah, because of the.
And I'm like, "Yeah, I'm fine."
You were stunned by the
defense can't stop anybody
by the Philly special, man.
What is happening?
I know, right? Yeah. But at any rate, Sankey, I met him. I sat next to him in the commissioner's suite for the Super Bowl between the Rams and the Patriots in Atlanta, and he was sitting there telling me about all the SEC players that were in the Super Bowl that year. He was just all about the SEC, and this was at the height of the "It Just Means More." This guy, man, he just and he basically he runs a sport. It's that simple. He runs. I think he should, if he doesn't really run college football, because he's on the ball. He totally gets it. He knows exactly what's up. And this is the first SEC media day where there's 16 teams. Texas and Oklahoma are in the fold.
Let's go.
I know, right?
Let's go.
Just at a time as Nick Saban is there reporting on it from ESPN. Did you hear this today? That Nick Saban left his credential in his hotel room?
They wouldn't let him in.
We have that?
Can we?
I think we have this moment.
Amazing.
from he was telling the story to Greeny on Get Up. He's not very, like, his face is his identification. Like, he built the SEC, for Christ's sake.
What do you mean you're not going to let me in? Get out of here.
Good Lord, he built this place. But now he's not coaching Alabama anymore. Where's your credential, coach?
There's ever a time for, do you know who I am?
Well, he didn't pull that, to his credit. Check it out.
I've never worn a credential in my life, and was always, for 17 years, able to get into SEC Media Day without a credential. I had to go back to the room today and get my credential to get in. So that's one of the biggest changes I see. It's not like it used to be.
Oh,
so funny.
It's a new SEC world, Texas and Oklahoma here. So Greg Sankey was asked if there was, you know, Texas and Oklahoma might have some run of the place like they used to of the big at the Big 12 now that they're at the SEC table. You ready for this answer? Hit it.
Texas liked to think it ran things in the Big 12. I was curious what you would state as far as your expectation of Texas' influence and impact on the playing fields and in the boardroom.
I actually think I just answered that to Barry, that both are now part of a conference with peer athletic programs and peer universities. So they'll fit, and we'll fit together as 16.
He's also just so calm, casual, and direct about answers like that.
He's like the president of college football. He's the POTUS, man.
So funny.
And so, what a great way to basically say they've upgraded. And he just took a shot at the Big 12, didn't he? In a very passive way.
Big time.
Well, there's peer universities here. Well, like, Baylor wasn't their peer. Yeah. Now, here's the money quote again, because you have to listen to what this man is saying. I'm telling everybody, the Super Leagues are coming. It's coming. We're going to see a time when this man, Greg Sankey, in a working group with my former boss at CBS Sports, Tony Petitti, now the Big Ten commissioner, they're in a working group together. That, again, remember last time we heard from Sankey where he was talking about how he reached the phone to call Tony Petitti after a working group that had multiple programs and multiple conferences at an NCAA chit-chat talking about NIL, and here's the SEC commissioner in the back of the room waiting to hear what other conferences' questions are of the working group about name, image, and likeness and all the other issues that are confronting college athletics right now, and he said there were crickets in the room, essentially. Nobody said anything, and he's just like, I got to call Tony, basically. See, if I can paraphrase, Tony, can you believe this? Let's form a working group. Because, again, at some point, the answers are going to have to come, not just on behalf of the member schools, but on behalf of the kids who are being promised NIL deals and promised transfer portal gigs if they enter the transfer portal. If they come to our, you come to our spot, I'll offer you these gigs. And then they go in the transfer portal and they don't get NIL, they just get They get a name. And they don't get the job because some other kid came in the transfer portal and took the job. And there's no piece of paper that the kid can say, but you told me this. There's got to be rules on a piece of paper that can be enforced. And if that means the kids are in a union, then let's figure something out on that. And the only way to do that is to get the schools with the same issues and the same problems in the same room and let them figure it out in a smaller environment, not some monster environment where other schools and other programs that don't have the same issues to the extent that the SEC and the Big Ten or other larger institutes, other peer conferences maybe, like the Big 12. It's coming. But not, in Greg Sankey's opinion, yet from private equity, because that's the thing that it's trying to push the Super Leagues right now is outside money, not money that's in the pipeline from television deals and everything else. Outside money saying, we'll provide the funds, we'll put this together for you. Redbird Capital is an organization that's being mentioned right now when they're not buying what? Paramount?
Right.
As for private equity at this event, in this media session in Dallas, he said there are outside ideas, Greg Sankey, outside ideas, he's referring to them, that come from those apparently associated with private equity firms, professional league search firms, former executives from leading media companies who want to ensure their thinking. We have new wave entrepreneurs who want to be on the so-called front end of the new paradigm for college athletics. So not yet, is what he's saying. And then in terms of the impending House settlement and outside forces circling college sports in the SEC media day, he said, quote, we are literally working to make what would normally be a decade's worth of change in a matter of months. I'm telling you, this is all raining down right now. And this is the guy with his 16 member schools and the Big Ten with, I believe, that now their 16 member schools together. Add them together. What number does that make? 32. How many franchises are there in the National Football League?
32.
Okay. So you're halfway home. Give me 32 others. And you got two conferences of 32 with maybe two divisions of 16 or four divisions of four. Where have you heard that one before?
I think we could find 64 teams that are worth
I'm telling you, what the NFL model is twice over.
Right.
The question is, who's going to do it and when? Not yet is the answer.
Within Greg Sankey, from
private equity. He's not, I don't think he's interested in doing that just yet.
We'll see it in a decade, I bet.
I can't wait to get Sankey on here. He's setting it, we're circling a time to get the SEC commissioner, who I love chopping it up with. I really do. Although that day when we're sitting there watching the Patriots and the Rams have at it, and he's talking about all the SEC players out there on the field, because, you know, he knew I went to Michigan. He kind of razzed me for going to Michigan. He's talking about all the SEC players here in Atlanta in the Super Bowl. And I pointed to the quarterback of the Patriots. I'm like, how many rings does that guy have from Michigan? And that was the extent of my conversation with Greg Sankey. We've come a long way. We've evolved, is what I'm saying.
Well, your fandom has evolved.
I'm telling you guys, these days are coming. A decade's worth of changes in a matter of a few months. Good luck to us. All right, let's take a break. Rob Lowe is here. Are you ready for this, gents? This will be a lot of fun.
Yeah, man.
Greg Sankey with the Syracuse people.
Dude.
Let's go. That's what I was looking at.
An ACC school.
Yeah, of course. Not when he was there.
No, not when he was there. All right, let's take a break. Rob Lowe is here and getting ready for season 2 of Unstable on Netflix, which you can see right here on Roku. Rob Lowe on the Roku channel when we come back. We all know about the speed of sound. But have you ever thought about the sounds of speeding? If you drive over the speed limit, there are lots of different sounds that you might hear. Drive too fast, and you could hear the sound of your vehicle crashing. The sound of ambulances and first responders desperately trying to free you from the wreckage. You could hear the beeps of a heart monitor. You could hear doctors and nurses in an emergency room as you're being treated for your injuries. You could hear the sound of worried family members in the hospital waiting room, hoping to hear that you're okay. You could even hear the sound of people crying at a funeral. Because if you drive over the speed limit, whether by a lot or by a little, you could do damage that's beyond repair. You could seriously injure yourself, or worse, you could hurt and even kill someone else. When you speed, you put everyone on the road in danger. One way or another, speeding catches up with you. Paid for by NHTSA. Rich Eisen here for Sleep Number. They say opposites attract, and that's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is the best bed for couples. I can confirm exactly that. My Sleep Number setting is 60. My wife's is 70. It's just 10 numbers apart, but it is the world of difference. You can choose what's right for you whenever you like. If you like a bed that feels firm, but they want soft, Sleep Number does that. You want to sleep cooler while they like to feel warm. Sleep Number does that too. You have to feel it to believe it. Find the bed that's perfect for both of you only at a Sleep Number store. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, Sleep Number smart beds starting at $999. Prices higher in Alaska and Hawaii. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at a Sleep Number store or sleepnumber.com. Back here on the Rich Eisen Show, not just from a commercial break, but my next guest is back here, the Emmy Award nominated and co-creator of Netflix's Unstable that he is starring in with his son, John Owen. The great Rob Lowe is here. Good to see you, Rob.
Hey,
how are you,
thanks,
sir?
Thanks, everybody. Good to see you.
Great to have you back. Season 2 of Unstable available for streaming on August 1st, only on Netflix. Man, I remember meeting your son. He was a little tight.
He was probably... this tall.
Right. Now here you are in a terrific show with him right now.
I do wish, though, if he was going to go into show business, he'd have told me before I paid for the tuition to go to Stanford. Because you could go right from Jamba Juice to show business. What are you going to do?
What does the Stanford degree do for you right now?
Nothing. Zilcho.
There's no resumes, right?
I thought he was going to be, in a lab with a beaker curing cancer. Instead, he's writing jokes for me.
There's still time.
There's still time.
I mean, he can multitask.
He can.
You know?
He's super funny. And this second season, I mean, season one is currently on Netflix. So you can get caught up right now. Season two is August 1st. But he and the writing staff were able to raise the show and just so much just hard comedy, and there aren't that many hard comedies out there.
They're not at all.
No, there's no like 30 Rock, The Office. They're all have way more edge, and this is kind of a throwback in that way.
And it's just a lot of fun. Again, you're by the way, our radio audience just returned. Rob Lowe is here on the Rich Eisen Show. We're talking about Unstable. Season one is currently available for you to binge watch on Netflix. Season two is going to be out on August 1st. You play a biotech bro, pretty much, which is kind of timely for this day and age right now.
Yeah. I mean, the show is based on my relationship with John Owen on his Instagram, where he just murders me all the time. And it got to the point where every time I would do a talk show or do an interview, all they wanted to talk about was that. And so he and I thought, is there a show that could take advantage of that type of comedy? But then it's like, we don't want to play ourselves.
Right.
But we need to play the elements of ourselves that enable the comedy. So larger than life dad, son trying to carve his own way. Mm-hmm. And so we thought biotech is a perfect way because it's almost as silly and over the top as being an actor.
It's being
at this point.
For sure. And again, John Owen is your son, and he plays your son in this show, and everyone should check this thing out. Available again on Netflix season two on August 1st. How many baseball games have you been to this year?
A lot. I got to opening day. I wanted to see Ohtani's first, his debut, saw his first hit as a Dodger, was there for that. And I'm just in an Ohtani land. I am just flummoxed and gobsmacked because I've seen a lot of baseball in my life.
Right.
And I've never seen anything like, I mean, all the Dodgers spring training were saying, he's special, he's special, he's special. You're not going to believe it. And I was like, yeah. I'm sure he's really good. I'm sure he is. It's other level.
I took my son before he went off to camp, my youngest son, before he went off to camp, the night, I believe, that this happened, as a matter of fact, on the night of the City Connect jerseys against the Angels. And he connected and, was one of those no doubt abouters that you knew by hearing the crack of the bat.
There's something about the ball off of his bat.
Correct.
And everyone talks about it. Dave Roberts, all the announcers, people who know, who've heard balls go off bats for years and years and years.
Right.
And I asked Skipper what it is, why that is. And he says, it's the torque. He said it was like Tiger when Tiger was young. He was able to put that body in a position
right.
with that no one else does, because it does sound different.
We were talking the other day when Willie Mays passed away, mm-hmm. and he yeah. was the unanimous choice of greatest living ball player on the day that he passed. And we're talking about who is that now?
Greatest living.
Great of any generation, oh, any baseball player that's alive right now. And we threw out some names from Ken Griffey Jr., Barry Bonds, mm-hmm. still, you know, despite, you know, whatever asterisk you may put. Well, the guy was amazing before the asterisk hit.
If we're doing asterisks,
right.
Rose has got to be on there.
That's who I mentioned as well.
He's got to be on.
Well, you're an Ohio kid, yeah. right? Okay, so I'm with you on that. And then we eventually landed on Ohtani. Like, he may just be that guy.
What if he comes back? At this point, if you're the Dodgers, I wonder if they're like, you don't have to pitch. You don't have to pitch.
That's what he's saying all the time.
You should never pitch again.
I don't know. If I'm the Dodgers, I don't know if I
never
want
pitch
him pitching.
Again. Why?
Why? So he can hurt himself?
Yeah, exactly. Why? What's the point?
I don't know.
He's also hitting 40 points contract. Higher.
It was because he was yeah. a pitcher and a...
That's true. That's why it's a $700 million contract.
But meanwhile, he's worth every penny just doing this.
It's 280 when he was doing both. He's hitting 320 now.
I'm with you, man. I keep him in leadoff when Mookie comes back. And I'm you know, if he wants to pitch here and there for a laugh...
At this point in time, they could actually use him pitching right now.
In all
seriousness, I will push back and say no. I don't know if I could provide the innings required by the Dodgers right now. But yeah, I mean, I don't know. I'd want to just see. Wouldn't you want to go to a game where he's doing the both?
For sure.
I mean, that's it.
I think. Look, I think you have to do it just because of the. It's like the greatest bobblehead night of all time. You know, you get to see that, but I don't know, man.
Did you ever do a Dodgers celebrity game? You must have.
I did. I did one when it was actually baseball.
What do you mean?
They actually, before it was softball.
Before it was softball.
It was baseball.
Okay.
And it was one of those things that Billy Crystal was like the man, and he took it uber seriously. He was like Robert Conrad in Battle of the Network Stars for an old reference. Do you know what I mean? Like,
yes.
he was not messing around.
Yeah.
And then inevitably the game would devolve, like the serious people got their time, and then it would end up with, and I remember coming up to bat and they butchered my now batting Rob Love. Like they just completely, I was 15, Rob Love. And I think I had a single and got on first base, and then they made a pitching change and brought in Kareem.
Abdul Jabbar?
Yes, to pitch to Billy Barty.
Kareem?
How do you spell that?
Kareem pitching to Billy Barty. Billy Barty obviously was about two and a half feet tall. That's what the game became. And I was like, oh, God, I wanted to be when the game meant something.
It's a good bit.
So Kareem, you know, would be like Randy Johnson, right? Just dealing from way up here and
to a little person.
Oh, my God.
He was 3'9", Billy.
Three foot nine.
Rest in peace.
Oh, my God.
Facing 7'4".
So then you did it when it was softball?
And then I did
when it was like Tony Danza's party or something like that?
Whose party would it have been? Oh, you know who it might have been?
Who?
Might have been Charles Sheen.
Is that right?
Might have been Charles Sheen before the downfall. By the way, my man Charlie could play baseball.
Right.
For real. Major
yeah.
league.
Right.
He and my brother would look down their noses at Emilio and I being actors because they were going to be baseball players.
No kidding.
And so they would go to like some camp in Missouri. I can't believe I can't. And, you know, they'd have their shoe. And like they were, you know, Charlie could throw in the high 80s.
Yeah, we had Dennis Haysbert on the show a couple of years ago talking about Major League and how he and Charlie were the ones who could actually play.
For sure.
On that cast.
Yeah.
For real.
So that was my last Dodger celebrity game. It's hard to get. Not a lot of celebrities play baseball. You can get them to do celebrity basketball.
Yeah.
But it's super hard to put the team on the field that you want
because
they just don't play.
They just don't play the game, huh?
No.
My gosh. So you sing. Who did you single off of? Who did you?
Oh,
who was
God.
Pitching? You don't remember who was pitching? When
unfortunately, it was probably like Ann Jillian.
I'm loving every reference. I'm catching.
You're
every
getting everyone right. That's right. You and I are dangerous at a party.
I'm googling.
We will go off into a corner. and go into the most obscure
down the rabbit hole.
Yeah.
1,000,000%. I got you with Robert Conrad, man, when he was in Battle of Network Stars.
Oh.
Did you ever do one of those?
No, but I used to go because I grew up in Malibu and they were at Pepperdine.
Yeah.
And I would go and like, it was, I mean, I was a kid from Ohio arriving wanting to be an actor, and they were doing Battle of the Network Stars basically in my neighborhood. And man, I thought it was like going to the Oscars. I thought it was the height. I thought it was the super, it was the Super Bowl met the Oscars.
So if I'm watching like Telly Savalas do the tire race and I freeze it, it's possible I see Rob Lowe in the crowd.
Gabe Kaplan, Telly Savalas. And then, of course, the dunk tank. My favorite was that, like, they had an excuse to get the girls.
Right.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, of course.
It was shameless.
Yeah. You never did see, like, Larry Hagman in the dunk tank. You know what I mean?
No.
You know, it's always Victoria Principal in the dunk tank.
Yes.
Yeah,
and
man.
I remember you didn't want to sleep on Christy McNichol in the obstacle course.
Hold on, I gotta look up all these names.
Dude, this is outstanding. Every word.
Your audience is turning off, by the way.
Definitely not. Not in any way, shape, or form.
Okay, I hope
are
so.
You, is that happening? I'm sure of it. Fantastic.
Agent Rob Barbeau here. Running the 40?
Agent Barbeau running the 40. You are not wrong, sir.
That bunga is da bunga da bunga. You know what I mean? And I know you do.
Rob Lowe here on the Rich Eisen Show.
Rob Lowe, I do.
Did you see the Brat Pack doc?
I did.
What'd you think of it? I know you're in it. So, but have you seen it? I did.
I watched it. I thought Andrew did a great job.
Mm-hmm.
He's always been like super thoughtful. And just for me to see some of the folks, I haven't seen Allie in forever and Tim Hutton. Mm-hmm. I mean, it was fun for me to see everybody.
So did you learn anything from it?
I was really surprised at how being in the Brat Pack was such a source of angst for so long for some of the folks in it. I mean, nobody liked it when it came out. I mean, you know, who wants to be called a brat?
Right.
Who wants to be in a pack? And it was sort of reductive. You know what I mean? And had a little whiff of pejorative. And I think it probably did prevent some of us from being taken as seriously as we would have liked at the time.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, very quickly after that, I realized to the people that matter, and that's real people.
Right.
The Brat Pack was cool. Really cool.
I mean, I remember thinking it was cool at the time.
See, and that's
1,000,000%.
Yeah, and
I didn't sit there and think they're bratty.
No.
I just thought it was kind of a way to have a cutesy turn of the phrase of the Rat Pack, obviously.
Yeah, I've loved it for years, but this was Andrew's journey to coming to acceptance to it now. And I thought Demi also shared my similar perspective that people thought it was cool and we were lucky to be in it. That's what I feel... I've felt for years is like the notion that you could be a part of something that people remember for 30 years is great.
Well, I think there was a couple of different Brat Pack paths in a way, right? Yeah. There was the John Hughes path,
he was never buying what I was selling.
Why was that?
I don't know. I have my theories.
Were you never up for a John Hughes movie?
Yeah, I read for the Judd part in Breakfast Club.
Really?
Which is a great part. And Judd is spectacular. Breakfast Club is by far the best Brat Pack movie. Nothing is close.
You would think so.
I do. St. Elmo's Fire is other, but it's also very kitschy and 80s and like dated in a beautiful, fun way.
Right.
Breakfast Club is timeless. That's a great piece of film.
Showed that to my kids the other day. Susie and I showed it to the kids because, you know, they're 15, 13, and 10.
Yeah.
And we just wanted to show them as they're entering, my oldest entered high school this year, and my youngest son is heading in that direction, to talk about, just in case there's any anxieties that you're experiencing with your friends or whatever, that this is kind of a time-honored tradition for people your age. They could not believe that it was a movie that took place in one day. They were just like, at one point, half hour in, just had a couple of questions, like, when is it the next day? Like, they couldn't believe that it was just about a coming of age story that you could have over the span of a few hours.
Like, when do the superheroes show up?
I mean, that is maybe kind of this
when
generation.
When does the Wolverine come in?
To just mess things up, you know, where's Deadpool? But no, it was wild for current teenagers that you're maybe used to flicking their wrist to see 90 seconds of content.
Yeah,
I thought it stood up. I really thought it's still, my wife and I think it stands up.
Well, in going back to the Brat Pack doc, the clips they show of all of the movies, I was blown away today looking back at the quality of the acting of all those young actors. Every single one of all those movies were delivering. Mm-hmm. I mean, like real, I was so, because you know, when you're living through it, you think, I know I'm no Jack Nicholson, I'm no Warren Beatty, but looking back on it, you know, James Spader and Downey and just everybody in it was, they were really doing great work.
Right. And so you were kind of in the lane of the Brat Pack doing some more dramatic movies, pretty much. Obviously, yeah. The Outsiders being one. About Last Night, would you consider that a Brat Pack movie? Or just because you
it's
and Demi are
Brat Pack adjacent.
Right?
It really isn't, because it was right. Like, St. Elmo's Fire was like the last Brat Pack movie. And I think, yeah, because Elizabeth Perkins and Belushi, it was we had graduated. We were adults now.
But because David Mamet was right.
David Mamet wrote it.
Right. Yeah, he's not Brat Packy.
David Mamet's a lot of the Ian Brat Pack. that's my favorite one of all of them is About Last Night.
Why is that?
Writing is better. It's more timeless. It's like anybody who's thinking about moving in with their partner for the first time,
right?
It still stands up and it's hilarious.
Rob Lowe here on the Rich Eisen Show. Again, Unstable season 2 is available for streaming on August 1st on Netflix. You can see that right here on Roku. Okay, let's jump into some of the comedy here. We played Celebrity True or False with you last time you were here, but I've got one for you. Is it true that David Spade and Chris Farley fought over you on the set of Tommy Boy?
Oh yeah.
That's a true story.
I just saw Spade this weekend. We were at a party and we were talking about how much they would fight over me.
Over you? Why is that?
Well, the big fight was because I came into the hotel after shooting. Spade was not shooting that day, but Farley was. And Farley and I hit the jacuzzi, did a sauna and a jacuzzi. And the next day, apparently... Farley was like, guess who I was in the jacuzzi with? She was like, who? Was like, me and Rob. He's like, you didn't call me. I didn't. And I walk in and they're fighting over it.
Literally.
Like I was the girl. Like
fisticuffs? Like literally?
Wrestling. Yeah. They also fought. I saw Spade and Farley physically fight over me and over a turkey sandwich.
Why is the turkey sandwich? What happened there?
Because Spade is really hypoglycemic.
Okay.
Like crazy, like, you know, and like uses it to his benefit. I think it's kind of BS,
right.
But he likes to pretend like my blood sugar, I'm having the vapors. And so he always has his turkey sandwich near him and Farley accidentally stepped on it. And Spade Spade went after Farley, and then of course Farley ended it.
Yeah, I would think that you know that if it ever really came to you know height, weight, speed.
Apparently, they're doing a Farley movie.
Yeah,
and right, and yep. So when I saw Spade this weekend, I said, "Who's playing you?" And he said, "I want to know because I want to know who's playing the turkey sandwich."
I like that. So, but Farley was possessive of you, is what you're saying.
I was like I was the pretty girl that
to the two of them. Wow,
they're very possessive.
So that is true.
It's absolutely true.
And Farley was bragging that he was in a jacuzzi.
I was in a jacuzzi. So insane. True.
What was it like being on the set with him? Otherwise,
oh my God, none of us realized the impact that Tommy Boy would have. I mean that movie. I cannot tell you of how much that I get the feedback I get of Tommy Boy and how happy I am that I was in it because of what it means to people.
Right.
And My memories of it were we didn't know what was going on. We had a really, really good time. I remember Farley had a shot of espresso before every take. Not every scene, every take. I also remember taking him out to dinner to one of our favorite steakhouses, and he ordered two bone-in porterhouses, two. And on top of each bite, he put an entire cube of butter. Each bite. And it was so gross that I finally was like, he saw me looking like agog at him. And he finally, I'll never forget, he holds it up, gigantic bite of steak, on top of it, square of butter. He goes, it needs a hat.
It needs a hat.
True.
I guess it's nothing inaccurate. It did need a hat.
It needed a butter hat.
Oh my God.
Hat of butter.
Holy wow. Cow.
I mean,
that's not healthy.
Not
good.
On the set of Austin Powers, was that just as insane as it looks when you're watching it?
That's
what?
One where every once in a while, if you're lucky, you realize you're, it's the polar opposite of Tommy Boy. Tommy Boy, fun,
right.
Great,
yes,
great time. Right. No idea that you're making anything of significance. Zero. Austin Powers.
Yes,
I'm in Dr. Evil's lair. Mike is playing fat bastard, and he
dang it, it's funny.
Ad libs. That looks like a baby. And then does, I want my baby back, baby back, baby back, baby. Chili is baby. That's when you go, oh, I am in the presence of like comedy directly channeled from God on high.
And you can't blow it, right? You've got to keep it together couldn't.
I'm really good. I don't.
You don't break?
I don't break. I don't break because I got broken badly by Dana Carvey. On Wayne's World, there's a scene where I come down in the basement and Dana he's made a hand that moves and he pounds the hand with a hammer. Mm-hmm. It makes no sense. It's in the movie for no reason. It doesn't advance the plot. And I asked Dana, I said, what was that hand? He goes, well, he said, he's put it in my mind that the hand was going to strangle you. That's my Garth, by the way. Pretty good.
Very good.
But I broke so badly then that I swore that I would never do it.
Really? Mm-hmm. So you made a pact with yourself
that day
on the set.
Which is sad because I'm never in blooper reels.
Right.
So if you look at like Parks and Rec,
yeah,
all the blooper reels, I'm never in them.
Because you don't break.
I don't break.
How do you do it? Do you just...
Well, because the other thing is if you break, you can't use it.
Right.
And I always want to make sure that if something's super funny and I'm on camera, I'm not the one ruining that take.
Right. You don't want to be that guy. You're a professional, Rob Lowe.
Pro.
You're a friggin' lead pipe wielding professional. That's who you are.
Lead pipe.
That's you, man. That's you. Oh, my gosh. All right. You got a good Cruise story before I let you go?
Tommy?
Yeah.
Well, Tommy Cruise?
When did you first meet him?
I was 17. And I think Tom's a year older than me. So he would have been just 18.
Yeah.
And he was living at Emilio's house auditioning right after Taps. By the way, Taps, great movie.
Very much so.
Right?
Yeah.
Tim Hutton, Sean Penn, was Tom Cruise.
Early 80s or late 70s?
Like early. It was early 1980.
1980. Okay. So right there.
And we would work out and jog like running bros. But my favorite Tom... And I got a lot of them. I love him so much. He's the best. He's so competitive that we used to box in the hallway of the hotel we were staying during Outsiders.
Mm-hmm.
So much testosterone. We're 18-year-old guys,
right?
Stuck on location. So we would wear headgear and we'd have mouthpieces in, but we would legitimately spar. And I just remember. Tom is jacked. I'm like a pipe cleaner arm. I hadn't started working out yet.
Okay.
So I'm super I look like Karen Carpenter. I'm I am not jacked. And Tom is like this beast, but I hit him real clean, and I rang his bell. And the next thing I knew, I woke up, I was coming to on the floor, and he like completely knocked me out.
Because you,
because I hit him,
dazed
hard.
Him.
Yeah, and his eyes just went black. It was, but that's the stuff we did. That's the kind of, that's what guys do. It's like Fight Club.
What do you think of when you see this photograph, man? Look at that picture of you guys.
I think of what was happening there. We were supposed to be looking tough and cool. Yes. Obviously, we're not. We shot an hour. Tough, cool, tough, cool, tough, cool, tough, cool. And they brought in food just off camera. And there were a lot of local kids who would come into this little place where we were shooting and steal the food. And Leif Garrett was standing near them. And there was an announcement that the food was for the talent only.
Mm-hmm.
And Ralph Macchio said, yeah, Leif, the food's for the talent only. And we all laughed, and that's the photo.
And then they snapped this picture.
That's the photo after that happened. It's the only smiling photo we took. By the way, I did break the... Oh, you, oh yes. Do you know why I don't break?
Why?
Who's the only... Bring the photo up again.
You.
Who's the only idiot not looking at the camera?
Because you broke.
Because I broke.
Yeah, Swayze sort of.
No, but he's
you know, he's got really, enough. I'm really sort not looking at the camera. Swayze's got three quarters. You see two eyes.
But I noticed, by the way... Tom and Emilio have the right idea, is stick the hand underneath the bicep.
Yeah, don't they, though?
Pump it up.
You can't do that now. Now everybody knows that move, and you can't get away with it.
But back then, look at that. Look at that. Look at Tom. He's got one arm.
There's another.
He's got one hand underneath, and so does Emilio.
There's another sort of group shot of us that is became the group shot. We're standing in an alley.
Uh-huh.
Right. And you guys will be able to find this. And if you look at it really closely, Swayze's standing on a platform of bricks that he's built for himself.
No way.
So he can
be taller,
get a little higher.
Yeah, it's right there. It's like it's the famous black and white photo of all of us standing in the alley. It's like the most, other than that photo we just saw. And I always like whenever, you know, if I'm walking out and people go, hey, will you sign this? And it's that photo. I always circle the bricks.
Yeah, I'm looking at the picture right now.
Oh, yeah, for sure. He's way bigger than everybody else.
See, look at his feet. You can see him in the you can see it in the shot.
Yeah. He's standing on top of two bricks.
Thank you.
Emilio, great Mickey Mouse shirt.
Okay. Well, that's another trick of the trade. I love when you stop by here. Thanks
so
for
fun.
Coming in. I know you don't live in town directly, so I appreciate you making the time. And congrats. We got John Owen here in a couple of weeks.
You've got to give my son a lot of... Do a gotcha interview with him, old school.
Like, what do you mean?
Like, you know, you sit in and then you just hammer him with tough questions.
Like what?
I don't know. We should think of some.
I mean, here's the thing. I know.
Ask him about his dating life.
Oh, geez.
All right.
Because
I never ask guests
about. He won't tell me. How about this? Say, your dad asked me
to
ask you about your dating life and watch him melt.
You want this to happen.
But you want the lowdown or something? Like he's not sharing enough with you?
He doesn't share anything with me about that. And the other thing is, you know, we got to build him up. I mean, to be a good guest, you have to learn trial by error.
Stories.
Right? That's right.
Who's your first interview then like that? Was it Carson? Were you on Carson? Were you with him?
My first big interview was Entertainment Tonight.
Okay.
I remember that.
Is that a Lisa Gibbons?
Yeah, it was like a Lisa. And then, you know, I never did Carson, and it's a big regret of mine. When I was in that era, it sounds insane, but you didn't do Carson because you wanted to be on with Joan Rivers because her ratings were higher.
No kidding.
Yeah.
So you did it with Joan?
Yeah, I did it with Joan.
Okay.
Johnny, I would see walking on the beach, though.
Come on. Are you serious?
Yeah. Because we lived on Point Doom.
Johnny Carson.
Johnny, legend.
What did he probably, the way I envision it, he would have probably one of those white sweaters tied around his neck.
with a visor. A tennis visor.
A visor.
Tennis visor. And he drove either a Camaro. What's the other car that's like the Camaro, the Corvette? He drove a Corvette.
And he had the white visor around his... I just see, like, it probably was, like, his U.S. Open tennis view, like, gear. walking on the beach. That's the way I envision this sort of thing.
This is my last, Carson. I'll just leave you this.
Okay, sure.
This is how you knew the area of Malibu changed. There was this old, beautiful, like ranch house had been there forever. And we used to ditch our surfboards there. A nice old couple lived there. Mm-hmm. And one day they said to us, well, you can't leave your surfboards here anymore because we're selling our house. We're like, oh, no, that sounds so... we're a little sad about it because we raised our kids here, but... We sold it to Mr. Carson, who lived across the street. 2 weeks later, he demolished that house and made a tennis court.
Wow.
Hi-o.
Hi-o, you're gone. Well, he did.
Of course you are correct, sir.
You are correct.
Rob Lowe, you're just a pleasure, man. I love when you come here. Greatly appreciated. Everybody, check out season 2 of Unstable on the 1st of August. And then look out for John Owen Lowe to be on this show, I believe, on the 29th of July, where I will make him squirm by asking him about his dating life.
First question. Right out of the gate.
Right off the bat.
Right off the bat.
Don't even set it
make
up.
Make him
right?
sweat.
That's what you're looking for.
It will be because he's very articulate, my boy.
Yes.
But he'll be
we'll snap that Dwight Gooden 12-6 curveball right off.
Crack that thing off.
That's 40 love.
the knee buckler right off the bat.
Yes.
Rob Lowe at Rob Lowe on both Instagram and all social media. Right here on the Rich Eisen Show. Back with more to wrap the show up in a sec. Let's talk O'Reilly Auto Parts, people. You love their jingle? You're going to love their friendly, helpful service even better because they're in the business of keeping your car on the road. And the parts knowledge they have, it's all you need for your maintenance and repairs. They've got thousands of parts and accessories in stock, either in-store or online, so you never have to worry if you're in a jam. The team at O'Reilly Auto Parts can test your battery for free in or out of your car. If it needs to be replaced, they'll find you just the right battery for your vehicle. Need your windshield wipers replaced, a brake light fixed, or quick service? They'll help you there and find the right part or point you to the nearest local repair shop for help. The professional parts people at O'Reilly Auto Parts are your one-stop shop for all things auto do-it-yourself, and you can find what you need in-store or online. So stop by O'Reilly Auto Parts today or visit us at OReillyAuto.com/Eisen. That's OReillyAuto.com/EISEN. O'Reilly Auto Parts.
It's kickoff time, and Believe Podcasts are here to get you ready for the season.
He wanted to change the culture, and he wanted me to be a part of that.
With Believe, you get immediate reactions, game previews, and expert analysis from all 32 teams, plus all of your favorite college teams.
He's just rare in just about everything he does.
Sideline to sideline, end zone to end zone.
This was good for everybody.
Just search Believe. That's B-L-E-A-V podcast, wherever you listen.
What was your baseball game like?
My baseball game was pretty good, but I didn't play in high school. I played like recreational league in Babe Ruth.
Okay.
And I used to pitch.
Pitch?
Yeah.
As well.
Pitch and hit, yeah.
So what was your pitching game like?
My pitching game was pretty good. I mean, I didn't, you know, I was a heavy ball. I had no idea how fast I was throwing.
Huh.
But people used to say, man, you got a heavy ball.
So when we're watching you swing in Major League as Pedro Serrano,
yeah.
Is that your swing?
That's my swing.
Huh.
Oh, and I don't know if we ever talked about this, but
okay.
Every ball I hit out, I hit out, except it, not as far as they shot it out, because they have to reverse the camera.
Hold on a second, Dennis Haysbert. How many home runs did you hit?
I hit three in the movie, right? Mm-hmm. I think I hit three in the movie. I hit every one of them I hit out.
Okay. And all the batting practice you
oh yeah I used to hit oh yeah I used to hit routinely.
So were you the best hitter of all the actors in
I would
that
say
movie?
So I would say so.
So
Charlie and I were the only guys that could really play baseball. Wesley was really athletic.
Okay.
And could run, but wasn't much of a hitter.
He couldn't hit, but could Charlie hit, or he was just
Charlie could hit and Charlie could pitch.
But you went yard more than anybody else in the cast of Major League.
Except for the baseball guys that were out there.
Actual. So who was the worst?
Oh, I can't. I won't say.
Yes, you can. You absolutely can. That microphone works. Corbin Burnson, could he?
Corbin was okay. I think Tom Berenger was like maybe the
no
the worst.
Kidding.
Yeah. I love you, Tom. He forced it out of me, man.
fun stuff on this show back in the day with Dennis Haysbert and just moments ago with Rob Lowe right here on our program. Welcome back to the Rich Eisen Show Radio Network, sitting at the Rich Eisen Show desk furnished by Grainger with supplies and solutions for every industry. Grainger has the right product for you. Call clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Aaron in Jacksonville, Florida has been hanging on, listening to everything. What's up, Aaron? You there?
Hey, Rich, what's going on?
What's on your mind, Aaron? What do you want to do?
I want to do the win-loss for the Jaguars.
For the Jacksonville Jaguars, okay?
Yes, sir.
The schedule is up. The music is starting. You're the third person to do this. Let's see what you're going to do right here. Aaron in Jacksonville, what happens when you start at the Dolphins?
Win.
Home for the Browns?
Win.
At the Buffalo Bills on a Monday night?
It's going to be a great game, especially with Hines Allen sacking. It's going to be a win.
At the Houston Texans, 3-0.
I'm being realistic. I'll take a loss.
Okay. 3-1, home for the Colts.
Win.
Taking on the Bears in Tottenham in London.
Win.
Then you got the Patriots the next week in Wembley.
Win.
2-0 in London. 6-1 coming home for the Packers.
I'm going to this game, and as much as I would love for us to win, I don't think so.
6-2 at the Eagles.
Loss.
Home for the Vikings.
Win.
At the Lions.
Loss.
Off the bye, home for the Texans.
Easy win.
Easy win.
Easy win. We'll be fired up from the Lions, man.
All right, so you're now
we'll be ready to get after it.
8-4 at the Titans.
As much as you want the Titans to be good, I'm sorry. It's a win.
9-4 home for the Jets.
Win.
10-4 at the Raiders.
Loss.
Oh, Gardner Minshew does it, huh? 10-5 home for the Titans.
Win.
11-5 at the Colts.
And we will win the last game.
12-5, says Aaron in Jacksonville. Thanks for the call, Aaron. Yes, appreciate it.
Oof.
So that's the third Jacksonville Jaguar caller that we've had. They all have them losing to the Texans in week 4 in Houston. They all have Doug Peterson losing his return to Philadelphia. And they all have them losing to the Lions. Everything else is kind of a mixed bag. 2-12-5 and 1-13-4. Boy, the win-loss game. People just get caught up in the trade wins, and it's tough to blow out of it.
Yeah, I got a 13-4, too.
Yeah, we actually got four here.
Jacob in Jacksonville had 13-4, one seed.
But
after losing week one.
All four of them do have them losing to the Texans in week 4.
Yep.
All four of them have them losing to the Lions in week 11.
And then nobody has Doug Peterson winning the return to Philadelphia. Okay.
Yep.
We shall see. Fun show, everybody. Thanks for participating. For those listening on the radio, Susie and I are going to go visit some kids in camp. Tom Pelissero is going to be in this chair tomorrow.
Tommy P.
So somebody who doesn't look like me will be sitting here tomorrow.
Welcome to Talkville,
the ultimate Smallville rewatch podcast from season 4. I'm glad that it's over.
As we know now that season 5 is supposed to be one of our better seasons.
Obviously the tattoo storyline, you know how I feel about that.
You hating that storyline brought me a lot of joy because I kept waiting to see how it was going to keep going and then how they would somehow settle it.
Binge seasons 1 through 4 of Talkville before season 5 begins, wherever you listen.